supersymmetric theories, if you want to have some non-standard model-like properties of this Higgs, and also what are the implications for the vacuum of our universe. So this is basically a short outline of this talk that is divided in two parts. So the first part, I will try to show you what are the connections between having scenarios that are enhancing the Higgs to the photon rate and having a vacuum that is stable, or if not stable, at least metastable with a lifetime longer than the age of the universe. And then in this first part, I will show you a rather nice scenario that can be realized in the MSM that can enhance this diphoton rate through loops of light leptons. And then in the second part of this talk, I will actually comment on the phenomenology of this model, and in particular on the way to probe this model at LHC directly producing these light leptons. All this seminar is based basically on these three publications. The last one was on the possibility of enhancing the diphoton rate in this scenario. The second one was dealing with the phenomenology of this scenario. And the last one, finally, about vacuum stability, that is actually putting a very strong constraint on this kind of scenario. And we were not aware that this vacuum stability is actually putting the most important constraint on this kind of new physics. And actually, this last paper appeared last week. So if you're interested, you can take a look. So what about LHC data? Up to now, probably the most positive, let's say, plot are these plots that are showing the observation of a new boson at around 125 GeV, as it was announced last July by Atlas and CMS collaboration. Here I'm reporting the two plots that were showing this phi sigma of significance of this excessive events. Now the significance is more, but actually these were the two plots used to claim the observation of this new boson. And this observation was coming mainly from an excess of events in the diphoton rate, as shown here by these two green lines. And actually, this is the most important result from the LHC so far, because what we don't have, actually, is any sign of new physics. So we don't have any sign of new exotic resonances, either coming from supersymmetric models or coming from more exotic models. So the question is what we can conclude from this kind of nightmare scenario that LHC is pointing towards. So what are the kind of conclusions that we can get? Simply thinking that we have a new boson, let's call it the Higgs, with a mass at around 125 GeV, and also what can we learn from the Higgs rates? So first of all, from the mass of the Higgs, 125, let's say, we can learn that actually we have not been too unlucky, in the sense that experimentalists will give us really a huge quantity of information on this Higgs, because having this mass, then we expect not to have a relatively good measurement of the gamma-gamma and ZZ rates that are the two golden channels in the low mass range for the Higgs. But also we expect to have a rather precise measurement of Higgs decaying to BB, to WW, to tau tau, and probably also gamma Z. So being at 125 GeV in this respect is not that bad. Then also simply imposing to the standard model, setting the free parameter of the standard model, the Higgs mass, to 125 GeV, there have been investigation on what are the properties of the vacuum of our theory if you simply assume the standard model valid until the Planck scale. So in this paper of De Grassi, Giudice, and collaborators of last May, what they were doing is to compute for the first time at next to next leading order the running of the quartic coupling of the Higgs boson as a function of the energy. And they're showing that basically if you go to the Planck scale here, this quartic coupling is negative, so you're not in a situation in which your vacuum is absolutely stable. And actually, since they do this computation at next to next to the leading order, they were able to put a lower bound on the mass of the Higgs in such a way you can have absolute stability. And if you take a look at this lower bound, you can see that actually they were able to exclude the Higgs boson masses below 126 GeV, already at a 2 sigma level, because as I said, now the theory error is rather limited since they are pushing this computation to the next to next to the leading order. So to take home is that actually, if you have a standard model valid until the Planck scale, then your vacuum is not absolutely stable, as shown by this plot, but actually you are in a rather kind of fine-tuned region in which your vacuum is metastable with a lifetime longer than the age of the universe. So this is the kind of conclusion that you can get simply if you impose the standard model to have a Higgs at around 125 GeV. And this seems rather a coincidence. Maybe it's calling for some interest in new physics at the Planck scale, because here, as you see, you have a lambda coupling that is negative. Actually, the beta function is almost zero. So it seems a kind of coincidence that probably is calling for some interest in physics. So basically, this is what you can learn if you just take the information of the Higgs mass. Now, as I said, in this paper, they were assuming the standard model valid until the Planck scale, and LHC, unfortunately, is not really pointing towards the presence of new physics at the TV scale. But however, we have not to forget that there are still very sound theoretical motivation to believe that there is some new physics at, let's call it, the TV scale, in order, for example, to address the gauge hierarchy problem. Now, this new physics, here I'm putting just the example of stops that can address the gauge hierarchy problem if they are at around the TV scale. This new physics should couple with the Higgs, and then coupling with the Higgs is also natural to conclude that probably it will introduce some new physics effects in the Higgs rates. So basically, simply assuming naturalness, so assuming a model that is able to address the gauge hierarchy problem, is also rather natural to conclude that probably these new degrees of freedom will introduce new physics also in the Higgs rates. So the study, the rather precise study of Higgs rates can show some new physics and can be a rather good route to access new physics, actually. That is, of course, complementary to looking for new resonances. Then, of course, as I've shown you, the connection between the Higgs mass and the vacuum structure, it would be also interesting to see, once that you have some new physics in one of the Higgs rates, if you can show some connection with the structure of the vacuum of your theory. And this is indeed what we have done. So this is a state of art of the Higgs rates, as it was shown by the ATLAS and CMS collaboration at HCP, like some weeks ago. So what ATLAS was showing is the update of all the rates but gamma gamma and ZZ. So gamma gamma and ZZ were simply the old result obtained with five plus five inverse Pentobarnum data. And instead, concerning CMS, they updated all the rates but gamma gamma. As you can see here, the rates are pretty much standard model-like, because here is what you would get in the standard model. You see that more or less you have rates that are consistent. The only probably small deviation, if you look simply at the sector values, is coming from this gamma rate here. But then, of course, again, if you introduce this one sigma band, then you get pretty close to the standard model value. And actually, also, there have been rumors that we don't know if this small enhancement will be confirmed with new statistics, but this is still an open question. And for this reason, in my opinion, it's rather interesting to speculate what would be the consequences in new physics models if this rate is not standard model-like. Now, if you are curious about the numbers. So these are the numbers that Atlas and CMS are quoting for the diphoton rate with the corresponding one sigma band. And if you combine these two numbers, you get something like a 70% enhancement with this error. So basically, the standard model would be consistent with the present data on the diphoton rate at a level of more or less 2 sigma. So all these rates are actually fixed once that you fix the coupling of the Higgs boson with all these guys, so with massive gauge bosons, with fermions, and the effective couplings with photons and gluons. Now, in some sense, it's easier to modify the effective couplings of the Higgs with photons and gluons because they are rising at the loop level in the standard model. And in addition, having a Higgs, you don't have necessarily to have this coupling very large, as instead you should have necessarily this coupling rather sizable, since by definition the Higgs should give a mass to these guys. So let's say that from this point of view, it's easier to modify this effective coupling of the Higgs with two photons and two gluons. And since, as I've shown you with these rates, if you really want to be kind of positive, you can say that maybe you have some new physics here, but then the other rates are very standard model-like. So maybe just taking a look at this early data, what you can maybe guess is that you have new physics in this effective coupling here and nothing other. So basically what you want to change is the coupling of the Higgs with two photons without touching any other coupling. So this can be done if you take, of course, some particle in the loop that has got electric charge but is not charged then under SU3. To understand which kind of parameter dependence you have in this kind of theories, you can use the low energy Higgs theorem that is saying that if you want to compute the coupling of the Higgs with two photons, then this coupling will be proportional to this logarithmic derivative of the mass of the particle running in the loop with respect to the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs. So basically the sign of this quantity will be fixed once that you fix the sign of this guy. If you look at the standard model, the two main contributions are coming from a top loop and the W loop. The main contribution is the W loop that is negative. And this is telling you that if you want to enhance this effective coupling, then if this beta function coefficient are positive, as for fermions and scalars, then this derivative should be negative. So basically, this is hinting towards models with extra scalars or extra fermions that have a mass that is actually decreasing if you increase the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs. So if this derivative is negative. There have been a lot of investigation in the literature about the possibility of changing this effective coupling. And here is a summary taken from this paper of the several possibilities of enhancing the diphoton coupling. If you have some extra particle that can be a new W boson, a new scalar, or a new fermion coupled with the Higgs. And basically, the main conclusion is that, as expected, in order to have a sizable contribution on new physics, then this new particle should be pretty light and also sizably coupled with the Higgs. This, as I said, was expected, but what probably was not really expected was how light this particle should be. But if you take, for example, the case of a scalar, of an additional scalar, and you look at the numbers, if you want like a coupling of the order one or so, and then you want an enhancement by, let's call it 50%, you see that you have to have scalars in the range 100 to 150 GeV. So very close to the left bound to have something that is visible. So there are two issues then. The first issue is, since you have these very, very light particles, which kind of effects they can give in the vacuum structure of the theory? And second of all, if these very light particles would have been already seen by the LHC. So
what do you think for the for new fermion phase? Why do you choose for lambda?
Yeah, this is an example that we are giving in this paper.
That would be like integrating out some heavy scalar.
Right, right.
And,
That is producing this effective operator here. Right. Yeah, some heavy resonance.
Term, I think it's much more dangerous, right? Because the color term.
Yeah, they can be like lepton-like, heavy leptons.
Those fermions, you're not referring to the quarks, you're referring to
additional fermions that have not SU3 charge, actually. So for all the torque, I'll consider all particles. Right, right. Because what I'm trying to argue is that, yeah, once that you change also the production, then you should see new physics also in the other, you know, the other rates. So what you can try to do is simply to change the dephoton partial widths, basically. So the question is, if you stick to supersymmetry, what are the possible candidates in order to do this that can do this job of enhancing the dephoton rate? So the first possibility is to consider light fermions, and so if you just consider natural theories, then you are led to think that your charginos are pretty light and are at the bottom of your SUSY spectrum. And then you may wonder if these charginos can induce a sizable effect in the dephoton rate. Now, if you take simply the charginos of the MSSM, actually, the new physics effect in this dephoton rate is very, very small. And this is coming from the fact that, again, you can understand the parameter dependence using the low-energy Higgs theorem. And you see that the contribution to the amplitude is, first of all, suppressed by tangent beta. So you have to go to a regime in which tangent beta is very, very low. And second of all, you don't have anything that is enhancing this contribution to the partial width, because you have also suppression by gauge couplings. So basically, at the end of the day, even if you push tangent beta to very, very low values, plus also you take charginos that are right at the left bound, what you can get is at most like 15-20% of effects on your physics. So it seems that just the charginos of the MSSM are not really giving a too exciting new physics effect in this channel. One might wonder if what happens if you extend the MSSM, so if you are still in a supersymmetric theories but beyond the MSSM. And there have been this work of Niemann collaborators of last July that were showing what happens if you take some additional charginos that are coupling to the Higgs through these marginal operators, and which kind of new physics effect they can give in the Higgs to the photon partial width. So here in this plot, they are showing the kind of enhancement as a function of the two chargino masses. Don't know if you can read the numbers, but in this in this region here, they're predicting an enhancement by 50% or so, here 75 and so on. And but the main message is that having a large enhancement of this rate is requiring this coupling to be rather sizable. But then this, as a consequence, will lead to a running of the quartic coupling of the Higgs to negative values. So basically, if you go to higher and higher enhancement of the dephoton rate, what you get is a minimum that is, again, metastable. At a certain point, you end up even in a minimum that has got a lifetime shortened than the age of the universe. So basically, here in this plot, they are also showing the UV cutoff of this theory, above which you would need some new degrees of freedom to cure this problem. So again, to lead the land coupling not to be so negative. So basically, you see that, as expected, the more you go to larger enhancement of the dephoton rate, the more this UV cutoff go to lower values. So basically, if you want a theory that is cut off, let's say, at least at 10 TV or at least at 1 TV, you see from here that enhancement by more than 50 or 70% are not possible because of the constraints coming from vacuum stability. So the main message is that even if you go beyond the MSSM and use charginos to enhance the dephoton rate, then a too sizable enhancement could not be reached because you end up in theories with a vacuum that is not a good vacuum, let's say. So the question is, so this is what is happening in theories, in supersymmetric theories, if you have additional fermions. The question is, what happens if you have supersymmetric theories with additional scalars that can induce some new physics effects in the photon rate? So if you, again, take the MSSM, I will walk through that.
That's what you've shown me before, that the conclusion of scalar is the least, scalars contribute the least to the bipolar.
Right. But in terms of working, I mean, yeah, you will see that you end up in the same kind of problems that you have with fermions, because also these scalars, since they give not too huge contribution on new physics in this rate, then they should be very light. And if they are very light, we'll see that you have, again, problems of vacuum stability. So let me take, again, as an example, the MSSM. And the first possibility of having some extra charged particle in the loop is coming from a charged Higgs. The point is that in the MSSM, the coupling of the lattice Higgs with two charged Higgs bosons is dictated by gauge coupling, so it's very small. And if you take this plot and you see what happens for these very small values of the coupling, you see that even for charged Higgs boson at the left bound or even below, you could not really get sizable enhancement. So the charge X of the MSSM is not working for this aim of enhancing the photon rate. You may wonder again what happens if you go beyond the MSSM. Now, beyond the MSSM, in principle, what you can have is now a coupling that is larger here. So in principle, it can be easier. But then what is the difficulty is that if you have a coupling with the lattice Higgs that is sizable, plus a charged Higgs boson that is close to the left bound, let's say 100 GeV or so, what you have is generically very large new physics contributions to flavor transitions like B2 tau nu or B2 S gamma. And this is rather difficult to solve this kind of problem. So even going beyond the MSSM, it seems that the charge X is not really easily leading to large new physics effect in the diphoton rate. And so the other possibility, the only other possibility in the MSSM is to take light sleptons. So if you take light sleptons, and again you impose the low energy Higgs theorem, then you see that the contribution to the amplitude is enhanced by the second power of mu tangent beta, so by this off-diagonal term of the slepton mass matrix. But then since, so in order to have this enhancement, you have to have this off-diagonal term large, then you see that since it is suppressed by the mass of the corresponding lepton, then you should, to maximize this new physics effect, you should take third generation sleptons, so staus. So these light staus, in principle, could give a sizable enhancement to the diphoton rate. So here we are showing the diphoton rate normalized to the standard model value. It's a function of this mu parameter that is fixing the mixing between the two staus, and it's a function of the soft masses of the staus. And you see that if you go to, so basically the yellow region is the region that is allowed by the left bound on the stau 1 mass. And you see that if you go in a region in which the star 1 has got mass, let's call it 90, 120 GeV, then in principle you have sizable enhancement. Now, you can also imagine to expand this plot to higher values of mu. And as you see, going to higher values of mu, it would lead to even a larger enhancement. But actually, we see that going to larger values of mu would really lead to problems of vacuum stability. So let's analyze this issue of vacuum stability with this model of scalars. So now the problem is kind of different.
So in the previous line, sure. Where is your left-handed stop and where is your right-handed stop?
Right, so here, just as a matter of simplifying the number of parameters you have, we are putting the generator left-handed soft mass and right-handed soft mass. So these two are equal.
Okay.
and then everything is fixed in the mass matrix. Once that you also fix the value of tangent beta to a large value. Actually, you can show that these kind of effects you can also get once that you put some splitting between these two soft masses. You don't lose all generality in just putting them equal. So what is the issue of vacuum stability? Now, it's different from the fermion case because it's not that the quartic coupling is driven negative because of renormalization group effect. But what you have is that actually the appearance of extra minima in addition to the electroweak minimum. So basically, you have to write down your scalar potential of your Higgs and of the two staus, stau left and stau right. And then you see that the scalar potential has got a term, a trilinear term, that can induce extra charge breaking minima. Now you see also that this term is enhanced by mu tangent beta. That is exactly the parameter that is enhancing entering in the enhancement of the diphoton rate. So simply looking at the scalar potential, you can understand that again, if you go to a regime in which you really enhance a lot the diphoton rate, then you may end up in problems of vacuum stability. So here is actually the bound, the upper bound that you get on the value of mu tangent beta as a function of the star one mass. Once that you impose that the electroweak minimum of the theory is metastable, but with a lifetime that is longer than the age of the universe. Now, just a couple of details on this computation. So we did a computation in several different ways. So actually, this blue line is obtained using a publicly available code that is called Cosmo Transitions. And instead, this red line was obtained with some approximation. So basically, what we are considering is a one-dimensional potential. So we are taking this potential, finding the two minima, and linking them through a field above which you computed the bound section, and then basically you impose that the lifetime is long enough. So basically, you see that these two methods are rather well agreeing with each other, but are not actually agreeing with this older computation shown by this paper. And based on this computation, actually, there was a paper last August that was showing that if you impose the vacuum stability bound, then your enhancement of the diphoton rate using these light staus cannot be larger than 25%. Actually, we were in contact with the authors of this paper, and at the end, they agreed with us, and probably they're putting a new version of this paper in the archive, or they have already done it. And so it's interesting to see which kind of possible enhancement you can get once that you take this bound instead of this bound. And so this was shown by this plot. So basically, first of all, here I'm showing again the upper bound on the value of mu tangent beta for different values of tangent beta. And as you see from here, going to higher values of tangent beta is relaxing this bound. And this is due to the fact that the scalar potential is not simply containing this term that is inducing this extra minima, but is also containing this quartic operator that is enhanced by the second power of tangent beta. So because of it, going to higher values of tangent beta is kind of relaxing the bound of mu tangent beta coming from vacuum stability. That's why here you have this kind of plot. And in correspondence, you can also draw the plot for the diphoton rate as a function of the star one mass for different values of tangent beta. So you see that in principle, going to higher and higher values of tangent beta, you can get higher and higher enhancement of the diphoton rate. But then, of course, going to two huge values of tangent beta, you will end up in Yukawa couplings that are not perturbative. So at a certain point, you have to stop in taking larger and larger values of tangent beta. So what we did was to compute the bound of perturbativity on the Yukawa couplings. First, you can see what happens at the tree level. So basically, you have this proportionality between the tau and the bottom Yukawa coupling with tangent beta. you run these two Yukawa couplings. This is the running as a function of the energy until the gut scale. And so with solid lines, we are showing the tau Yukawa coupling. And instead, with dotted lines, the bottom Yukawa coupling. What you see is that the first Yukawa coupling to blow up is the bottom Yukawa coupling at large values. So basically, if you want to impose perturbativity, let's say, until the gut scale, then you cannot go to tangent beta larger than 70 or so. Right. In fact, this is the next slide, actually. So indeed, you have not just to stop considering this three-level relation between tangent beta and the Yukawa couplings, but you have to introduce also this loop contribution to the Yukawa coupling. And in principle, as Maxim was saying, this loop contribution are rather sizable. And this is because, first of all, these loop diagrams are enhanced by tangent beta, that is large in our scenario. Second of all, because if you take, for example, this delta B, that is the loop contribution for the Yukawa coupling of the bottom quark, then you see that you have a loop of stops. And if you just think to be in the MSSM, and then to impose to the stop to give the right amount of contribution to the mass of the Higgs, so to have this 125 GeV Higgs, then these stops should be, let's say, in the 500, 600 GeV range and heavily mixed, if you don't want to decouple them. And if you are in this regime, then this quantity is relatively sizable. And the same if you take also gluinos at around the TdV scale and so on, then you plug in numbers. And what you see is that basically this delta B is of the order 1. It can be like 0.5 or so, but this can change a little bit the running that I've just shown you before that was arising at the 3 level. The same is actually also happening if you take a look at the Yukawa coupling of the tau lepton. Again, you have these loop contributions of that are coming from loops of staus. And since you are in a regime in which your staus are light, then also this contribution won't be negligible. And again, you have some contributions that are like of the order 0.1 or so. They are one order of magnitude smaller than the delta B, because you have suppression by weak gauge couplings. Furthermore, as you see now, concerning the size, this is a kind of consequence of having the MSSM, so the size is relatively big. But then you don't have any information on the sign of this loop contribution, because in principle, you can change the sign that you want for the gauge masses, for the mu term, for AT. Of course, if your aim is to enhance as much as possible the diphoton rate and being fine with the perturbativity, then the choice that you have to make is to take this delta B positive in such a way that, as you see from this formula, the bottom quark Yukawa coupling will be smaller than what you have at the 3 level. And vice versa, you should take this delta tau negative. Now, this is just to show you that playing with parameters and trying really to maximize the diphoton rate, again, imposing vacuum stability and this perturbativity bounds, you cannot get farther than 50%. That's why I'm kind of playing a bit with parameters to see at most what you can really get. So doing this choice of sign, you can again see what happens to the running of the Yukawa couplings of the bottom and the tau. And you see that now, actually, the first Yukawa coupling to blow up is the Yukawa coupling of the tau lepton that is shown here with solid lines. And also, if you want to have perturbativity until the gut scale, then the tangent beta of the tau sector, that is defined here as this ratio, should not be larger than, let's say, 90 or so. And this implies, again, that tangent beta should not be larger than 70 or so once that you put the one loop corrections. So you may wonder which kind of new physics effects you have in this diphoton rate once that you impose that this tangent beta effective in the tau sector is not larger than 90. You can, again, take the plot that I showed you before. And if you read the numbers, you see that you cannot get an enhancement by more than 50% or so if you impose, again, the two conditions of vacuum stability plus perturbativity until the gap scale. So this is the conclusion that you have simply using a scenario with extra scalars. Now, you may wonder, so up to now, what I've done is to consider a scenario, let me call it the MSSM with this light Staus, in which you have at the low energy, the lightest Higgs, Staus, and basically nothing other. So in principle, the heavier Higgs, Higgs bosons could be really decoupled, could be in the 10 TeV range. Now, a good question would be, what happens if you push a little bit down the heaviest scalar? So if you put some small mixing between the lightest and the heaviest Higgs of the MSSM. Now, putting a small mixing between these two Higgs of the MSSM will induce some modification of the coupling of the lightest Higgs with bottom quarks. And so you can understand that if you put a big mixing, then you expect to have a large correction of the coupling of the Higgs with bottom quarks, and so a large correction of the total width of the Higgs boson. So you expect also to have all the other rays of the Higgs boson that are not standard model-like. And this, as I said, at the beginning of this talk, we would not like to have. So that's why if you want really to consider some mixing between the two Higgs bosons, then you should be in a regime of almost decoupling. So basically, your mixing should be pretty small. So the question was, if you put this very small mixing between the two Higgs bosons, maybe the bound that I told you of 50% of the enhancement of the diphoton rate maybe can be relaxed. So what we did was the investigation of this scenario with light Staus, but once that you push a little bit down the mass of the heaviest Higgs. So a little bit down, but again, with the hypothesis that this MA is still rather big. So what you can have is actually some loop terms arising in the mass matrix of the two Higgs bosons that is changing the mixing of the two Higgs bosons. This loop can be relatively sizable because the most important term is coming from loop of Staus. That this scenario that I'm showing you is very important because it's enhanced by the fourth power of tangent beta. And basically, choosing the sign of this term, you see that either this term is positive, and then this mixing term will be smaller than not having these loop corrections. And vice versa, if these loop corrections are negative, then this mixing term will be larger in absolute value. So basically, having positive loop contributions will lead to have actually a suppression of the partial width of Higgs to be a bar, so a suppression of the total width of the Higgs. And this could lead, in principle, to a larger enhancement of the diphoton rate. So this is shown actually in this plot, where we are showing. Right. That's shown here, actually, that so here in green, we are showing only the rate of diphoton and ZZ if you adjust this extra Staus and nothing other, so all the other Higgs are decoupled and everything is decoupled. On top of that, you can switch on these loop contributions, so lower a bit down the value of MA. If these loop contributions are positive, you have this extra new physics effect in the diphoton rate, but then also a small new physics effect in all the other rates, as you said, and vice versa if these loop corrections are negative. Still, I mean, looking at the numbers, you can see that here you're speaking about like a 10% effect or so in the other rates, and this could be still a possibility. Of course, it's not excluded. But that just we would like to see if having a small new physics contribution to all the other rates could kind of improve the situation in the sense of having of leading to a larger new physics effect in the photon rate. But actually, we will see that this situation, the constraints coming from vacuum stability are even stronger than before. So basically, the conclusion that an enhancement by more than 50% or so is not possible is still holding. So this is shown here. So again, we can take the scalar potential of the Higgs plus Staus. Now, since you are not completing the decoupling limit, then you don't have simply to put the H up, your scalar potential, but also you have to add the H down. And then you see that it appears a new trilinear term here that is in principle leading to additional vacuum of the theory for which the H up and the H down have a vacuum expectation value with opposite sign. So since this term is driving additional minima, then you can expect that the bound on new tangent beta is even stronger than before. And in fact, this is the case. Now, most probably you don't remember the values of the bound on mu tangent beta, but I can tell you that these bounds are quite more stringent than before if you introduce this more mixing between the two Higgs bosons. And this can be read also in terms of the possible enhancement of the diphoton rate that you can get. And you see that again, if you just want to have a tangent beta that is not larger than 90 or so, then again, enhancement by more than 40% or so are not doable. And this enhancement is coming from two sources, as I said. One is this Stau loop that is rather smaller than before because the bound on mu tangent beta is more stringent. And some part is coming also because you are reducing the partial width of the Higgs to V bar. But again, you see that even using the second Higgs boson of the MSM, really big enhancement cannot be get if you impose vacuum stability. So this is the main conclusion of this analysis that we did.
Is
so generically is 90 GB or so. Then you can be in a very, very fine-tuned region in which you squeeze a lot of spectrum. So basically, you don't put any splitting between the Stau and the LSP. But let me call it generically 90 GV, if you don't want to be in this very squeezed spectrum case. That is indeed this bound here that we are taking.
So because the production section
is there? Right. So, if you don't have any other question, let me pass to some comments about the.
There's also the possibility of the type 1 to the double model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Weiner and Fox and
right.
someone else have this model that actually shows it. I think basically what they do there is they reduce the PV bar rate and then enhance the other rates.
Right.
But not the gamma more.
Yes, yes.
So do you have any comments about that scenario? You know,
yeah, actually, so there are, so you mentioned this paper of Twix doublet model type 1, but then there are also other scenarios that are trying to enhance the diphoton rate through changing the Higgs partial width into B bar. Mm-hmm. One example is also if you take, for example, the NMSM and you mix the lightest Higgs with the singlet so that you can reduce it. And yeah, actually these models can still work, probably also can get even a larger enhancement compared to this model with extra either scalars or fermions. But as you said, what you get is also some relatively sizable new physics effects also in the other rates. If you simply want...
Would you know, like, for example, in that type 1,
mm-hmm.
would you have similar constraints of vacuum stability?
No, I don't think so, because it relies on the mixing, so, yeah.
Well, in the NMSM, there is other, you have to worry about the vacuum stability of the scale of the singlet as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, as far as I know, the constraints that you get are not that strong as here, yeah. Because, I mean, basically the new physics effect that you are requiring is kind of less strong in the sense that it's enough really to change like 10% or so the partial width into V bar, the branch deviation to V bar that you can get immediately a sizable effect in the diphoton rate. So usually the kind of constraints you get from these kind of models are less stringent than here. Yeah. So what you can say about the phenomenology of these models, and in particular how you could probe these models at LHC through the direct production of these light stars. So first of all, we have to take care of possible constraints like from electric precision tests. But we see that actually by far the most important constraint on this scenario is the constraint of vacuum stability. All the other constraints that can come from direct searches of stars or also, as I said, electric precision tests are not really important. But let me spend a couple of words on these constraints that in principle you should take care. So electric precision test, we were wondering if the contribution of loop of these light stars and neutrinos can be important for electric precision observables like the T parameter. But actually, if you plug in numbers, you can see that even if you take stars at right at the lap bound, so as much as light as possible, so 90 GeV, usually you don't get a contribution to the T parameter larger than 0.1 or so. So basically, the message is that you don't have really problems of electric precision observables in this framework. Another kind of constraint that you can apply to this framework is to require that you have a good candidate to dark matter. So having a good candidate to dark matter, there are basically two possibilities. Either at the bottom of your SUSY scale, there is the gravitino or the lattice neutralino. So in this case here, as shown in these two plots, we are taking the LSP to be the lattice neutralino. Now, we are putting at the bottom of the SUSY scale the Bino, and then we have to impose, of course, that the relic abundance is not too large. So you have to see what are the kind of mechanisms that are responsible of the annihilation of this LSP. And as it was realized long ago, one good mechanism is to co-annihilate this LSP together with a star. And actually, in this scenario, the most important co-annihilation channel is the channel that is producing in the final state the Higgs plus a tau, because this diagram basically is enhanced by mu tangent beta, that is this large parameter you need for the diphoton rate. So what you can do is to plot the regional parameter space that is producing a correct relic abundance of this LSP Vino-like. And you see that basically, if you plot the split in between the LSP and the star as a function of the mass of the LSP, then you see that typically, so this splitting is giving you the strength of the co-annihilation channel. And typically, you see that the splitting required is not that low due to the fact that this co-annihilation channel is rather strong. And you see that, so here, the splitting goes down because you're closing kinematically this channel, and here instead it goes down. And then you can also see in this plot the Z and Higgs as channel annihilation channel for this LSP. But basically, so the main message from this plot is that if you want to have this tau at around 90 or 100 GeV, and if you are serious on having a good a candidate to dark matter that has got the right relic abundance, then the mass of the LSP should be at around 40 GeV. So basically, you have a large splitting between the tau and the LSP. And this is rather important because when we speak about collider searches, it's rather important to have a large splitting between the tau and the LSP so that when you decay the tau to a tau plus LSP, then you can imagine that the tau coming out is relatively boosted. So actually, this information coming from dark matter is leading us towards a scenario that probably is not too bad to be tested by the LHC because of this large, relatively large splitting. But before commenting on the prospects of testing this scenario at LHC, let me just spend one slide on a cute feature of this model that was realized by a paper of Giudice and collaborators of last July. So basically, in this paper, they were trying to see if there is a correlation between a diphoton rate that is enhanced and G minus 2 of the muon. Now you can tell me, in principle, there are no correlations because for G minus 2, you are using a Lupo's muons. For this diphoton rate, you are using a Lupo's taus. But a natural assumption is to have degenerate sleptons of second and third generation, and also to be fine with flavor constraints like tau to mu gamma or so. So basically, just imposing this condition, then these authors were able to show that we have a correlation between diphoton rate and G minus 2. So basically, as soon as you go to diphoton rates that are sizably enhanced, then also the new physics contribution to G minus 2 is sizable. And if you choose properly the signs, you see that an enhancement by 20% or more in the diphoton rate is going towards a prediction for G minus 2 that is inside this experimental bound.
But most of this is unphysical, you're telling us, right? Because you cannot get enhancement 1.8.
Right. Yeah. In fact, so here, just a detail of this analysis. So they are scanning on the mass of the tau. And so these green points are taus with mass above 100, here above 80. These black points would be below the left bound if you want to not be in this very squeezed scenario.
But the vacuum stability also cuts out probably something, right?
Yeah, it cuts out something, but probably not totally. I mean, here I would not apply this 50% that I was telling you because if you allow the tau to be very, very light, let's say 60 GeV, then you can relax a little bit this this bound. So here, basically, they were considering
60 GeV and you hide it from web somehow?
Yeah, because as I said, I can show you probably the
spectrum.
But you have to be
59 GeV.
Yeah. I mean, we never consider this possibility, so we are always stopping at 90 GeV at least. But in this scan that they did in this paper, they were also considering this possibility. That's why also the diphoton enhancement that they are showing is a little bit larger than what we are getting, simply. But I don't know if you want to go in this regime that is very squeezed. But still, yeah, the main conclusion is that this scenario plus the hypothesis of having degenerate taus and muons is leading to a new physics contribution to G minus 2 that would be on the correct side in order to address this anomaly. So finally, some prospects of testing this scenario at LHC. So what we are showing in this table is actually the production cross-section of either a pair of taus, either the largest one or the heaviest one, or an associated production of a tau plus a neutrino. These are the production cross-sections both at the 8 and 14 TV LHC. And if you look at the numbers, you can immediately conclude that maybe these two channels are possible, but not all the others, because you start with a very, very low production cross-section. So we see in the following a little bit what are the prospects of testing the pair production of two light taus or associated production of tau 1 plus a neutrino. And you see here that if you consider this W boson decaying leptonically, then in the final state you will have one lepton plus two taus, or here you have two taus. So basically what you have is a signature with multi-leptons plus missing energy. Now, there have been already several searches for this taus at LHC, and as I said, also at LEP, setting this bound. So one search of LHC was the CMS search for long-lived taus. So setting the bound on the mass of the taus to more than 200 GeV. But actually, this bound is not, you're not to apply this bound to our scenario, because in our scenario, the taus are promptly decaying to a tau plus LSP, so you don't have to take this bound of more than 200 GeV. Other searches were either based on taus produced in Suzy cascade decays of squarks and guinos. But again, if you consider this scenario in which you have at a low scale simply the Higgs plus taus and neutrinos, then in principle you have not to consider these bounds, because if you decouple squarks and guinos, these bounds are not important. But then finally, the most important searches actually were searches for multi-lepton signatures. These searches were done to look for chargillions and neutralinos, but actually they can be recast in order to see if you have some bounds on these light taus. So these are the most recent searches, multi-lecton searches of CMS and Atlas. What we have done is a simple recasting of these searches for our scenario of direct production of Staus or Staus and neutrinos. But you can see that even considering the 8 TdV data, actually these searches are not really sensitive yet, and they are quite far away from being sensitive. So it seems that even adding quite a bit of statistics, you cannot really get there. So these multi-lecton searches that are used to look for charginos and neutralinos seem not really to be sensitive to our scenario. So we were wondering, as I said, what LHC can do for a pair production of Staus or associative production of a Stau plus neutrino. So first of all, this channel is actually less promising than the second one that I will analyze. So this channel is the direct production of two Staus. So in the final state, you have two Taus plus missing energy. Now, first of all, what we did was to consider these two Taus, hadronic Taus, so that you don't lose too much in statistics, because already you are statistically limited. And if so, then you can see that these are the three main backgrounds. For the first two, it's easy; they are easy to suppress once that, for example, you veto invariant masses of the two taus close to the mass of the Z, or you require the PT of the leading tau to be relatively sizable. But the very important problem is actually this fake background of W plus jets, with one jet faking a tau and with a W decaying to a tau. And actually, you cannot really do that much against this background, because the jet rejection factors are not really excellent. So it's very easy for a jet to fake a tau. And even if you take into account other possible kinematical cuts on kinematical observables, you see that you cannot do that much to reduce this fake background. So this was this analysis was the content of this paper. Now we are looking at the possibility of probing this channel if you let both taus decay leptonically. But then, of course, you are losing quite a bit of statistics, because you have to introduce the branch ratio of a tau to a lepton. So it's still work in progress, but I believe that it's rather difficult, because you are really, really statistically limited. So in this case, of course, W plus J won't be a problem anymore, but then it will be a real problem in statistics. Actually, rather easier is instead this production of a Stau plus a neutrino. Then this neutrino is going to a Stau plus a W, actually with a large branch ratio, like 90% or so. And then basically in the final state, you have the two taus of before, but plus a lepton, plus missing energy. Now again, the main background is coming from W plus jets, with jets picking taus. But now it's much easier, because you have this additional lepton. So first of all, what you can require is that this lepton is sufficiently boosted. And this is especially coming from the signal, because you have actually a large mass gap between, a relatively large mass gap between the neutrino and the Stau. So you expect to have a lepton that is rather boosted. So asking for the PT of the lepton to be larger than, let's say, 70 or so is actually reducing quite a bit the W plus jet background, but not too much the signal. Still, as we see the numbers afterwards, simply imposing this basic set of cuts is not sufficient to reduce the W plus jet to a reasonable amount if compared to the signal. But actually, what you can do is to rely on a very important kinematical difference between signal and background. So basically, if you take the background, and if you just take events with a lepton that is boosted, then these jets have also to recoil against this lepton. So you expect that the jets will be also relatively boosted. So this is shown in this distribution. This is the distribution of the PT of the leading jet, or W plus jet background in blue. And you see that you have a peak at around 200 GeV or so for the PT of the leading jet. And instead, the signal is speaking to very lower values of PT, because now in the signal, this the leading tau has not recoiled against the lepton. So just considering this feature, you can understand that between taus or jets that are hard will really throw away the most part of the background, but at the same time, it will preserve a large part of the signal. So the numbers in the game are shown in these two tables for the 8 and for the 14 TV LHC. They were done with similar cuts applied. So if you take a look at the numbers for the 14 TV LHC, you see that once that you impose these basic cuts, so basically simply the requirement of a lepton that is boosted and large missing energy, you see that the W plus jet is still very large compared to the signal. But then if you veto these hard taus, then you see that they become of the same order of magnitude. Now, the main problem is the statistics, because you are speaking about very low production cross-sections. But still, considering the 14 TV LHC with the large statistics, then you can have hopes. And then also, you have to consider that this analysis was a rather simple analysis, and I'm quite confident that experimentalists can do better. And actually, for this search of associated production of tau plus neutrino, I'm in contact with some CMS experimentalists that seem to take care of this analysis. They're telling me that, I don't know, some results can be available for Morion, but in my opinion, it's very, very optimistic. But we'll see. It seems that, anyway, that experimentalists are interested to this channel. So this brings me to my conclusions. So in the first part of the talk, I tried to argue that if you want to have a theory that is enhancing the diphoton rate and nothing other, then you need these extra particles that are colorless. And these extra particles that can be the fermions or scalars, but generically, they induce some problems of vacuum stability of the theory. And we've shown that actually, if you want a theory that is metastable with a lifetime of the vacuum that is longer than the age of the universe, then generically, you cannot get too large new physics effect in the diphoton rate. Like 50% can be feasible, but not much more. And then I've shown you this rather interesting scenario that is a scenario arising in the MSSM with the light taus that can enhance the diphoton rate. Have you seen which kind of prospect you can have of testing this scenario at LHC? Thank you.
We have a few minutes for questions.
So would the Higgs factor be a E plus and minus factor would be kind of a dream case machine for you? Because your model would be discovered.
It would be incredibly easier. Yeah. At LHC, you have to struggle a lot for E plus and minus collider. Yeah.
Have you looked at the G minus 2 of the tau? Some people are saying that with the polarized beams at low energy, you can go as below as kind of 10 minus 5.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So that would be, your answer for G minus 2 of the muon, I'm thinking, should be rescaled upwards by the fourth power of the 17, which is the ratio of that's probably not unrealistic. They just killed Super B, but Chang Tao factory can be built with the same polarized beam idea. So.
Yes. Yeah, this could be also probe.
Any other questions? Well, Stefania is here for the rest of the day, so I'm going to talk to her. No chance. But thanks for coming.